Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamada, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody. This is Shisada Kono Kumada. I am joined by PLAN and three of our other four core council members for the Shambhala Center for Spiritual Awareness tonight. We have Timothy Humphrey, Megan Davis, and Linda Corrales with us tonight. I'm going to ask all of you now, we'll just jump right in. So let's all take a deep breath, get centered, call yourself forward, please. Mother, Father, God, that I am. Through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us. And I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And PLAN and I place ourselves in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Very good. Take your time. Come on back to me. We're delighted to be with all of you again tonight. And I'm especially happy to have my core council members here with me. I love that it brings. I think it's fantastic. So we'll see how engaging tonight can be. We'll do a little bit of back and forth. PLAN, was there anything that we had left over from last week that we need to readdress, or are we good?
I do have something. I'm trying to decipher what I wrote. I know what it was. When you were saying that a person takes the stance of, it doesn't matter what I say, I'm still wrong. Mm-hmm.
Were you referring to a person who gets in that defensive place is where they come from the space of, well, it doesn't matter what I say, it's going to be wrong anyway?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so we'll start with just saying that a person who brings that forward, that comes from deep pain, first off. Okay. Anybody, and I'm sure we all know someone who functions from that space. What they've done, it's funny, we, just for the listeners, we actually have our Charlotte sessions here before this radio program. And tonight we were talking a little bit about how the real issue here in this paradigm is that people get stuck in what their mind is telling them is their past experience. And so then they utilize their memory of the past experience to project out what's most likely coming. And then they make their choices from that place. And this would be very much in keeping with that. So the person who says, it doesn't matter what I say. Okay, here, I'll give you an example. You've got a man and a woman who are partners, okay? And let's say that they get in an argument, and let's say what the woman wants above anything else is just kind of to be heard, right? And let's say, it's very typical, a woman wants to kind of just let that emotional release go. So she wants to kind of just voice whatever's going on, not necessarily looking for an answer, but just wants to release it. And commonly for a man, his whole perspective will be, well, if she voices something, it means she's looking for an answer. So my job is to give an answer. And so you end up with this miscommunication going on between the two. So if they get in an argument where the woman brings forward something that she has recognized is, where he has maybe done something that at this point he knows he shouldn't because she's made it clear in the past she doesn't appreciate this or whatever. And all she's looking for is for him to acknowledge that he has messed up, right? Where the two of them are concerned, and to just maybe just give a heartfelt apology. That's all that's needed. She's not looking for any more than that, just for the acknowledgement. And it can happen very easily that the man would then come forward and say, because she might say, like, well, I don't understand why this needs to be such a big deal. Like, for me, it doesn't. And he might say, well, it really doesn't matter what I say because I'll be wrong anyway. Yeah. And she's standing there going, but that's not true. And in his world, it is true. Because it only had to happen one time where this kind of thing came up and he was wrong about something and he really did try to defend his side, right? And tried to kind of give all that information and she just wasn't having it. So as soon as that locked in that one experience, now he's going to rely on that to create his reality going forward with this woman and how they engage together. And that is his reality. His reality at that point is that it doesn't matter what he says. He can't be right because she's always right. And she's standing over there going, like, completely bewildered, like, well, I don't know where you get that. Like, that's like saying that I never admit that I'm wrong, and that's so not true, right? And she knows that to be true, but he can't see it. And so what he has done is taken that one experience, right, and then allowed, obviously within the experience, he felt very victimized, right? She was the perpetrator, she was right, and she crammed it down his throat, showed him how wrong he was, right, belittled him, demeaned him, however he experienced it, right? Doesn't mean that that actually happened at all, but based on his own patterning, most likely that's why he experienced it the way he did. And then he takes that, and as soon as he catches, now remember, like, from that experience, like, all of the dynamics that were involved in that experience all patterned in together. Right. So as soon as one of those little dynamics comes into his awareness now, it triggers the whole thing. And then reactive mind takes over and then he answers from that place. And he can't stop himself and he can't see outside of it. He's lost the ability to be objective in that moment. Yeah. So that one moment, this is the challenge here is what I was saying to the group earlier is that there is only the one moment. Right. And every possible outpicturing of the one moment that ever has existed, that ever will exist, is within the one moment. But all of those different, I'll call them outpicturings, are completely unrelated. But here, what happens is the brain, in that lower mind, will take the images and then they attach – a sense of memory to them because they're identified with the image itself, right? What that image meant to them. And then they use that to literally continue to replay it over and over and over. And of course, they replay it in a way that it will look like it's different because it gets replayed with different people. It gets replayed in different locations, right? Under different circumstances. So it always seems different, but it's the same exact thing that happens. And so that's all they keep doing is just living the past. And within that space, they're never ever in a place where they can be objective and present right here, right now. Because in the moment when the altercation took place, all that had to happen really was that the two of them were just present together, right? And if they were present together in that moment, if she opened her heart to say that hurt, in that moment, he could open his heart and accept it, right? And then come from a different place with it. You'll have to excuse me, I'm battling a little cold. So that's what's going on there. I don't know if that's remotely what you were getting at or not.
Talking about being in the moment, I don't know what I meant in that moment. So, but that's a good answer. Works for me.
Well, and the beauty of that particular teaching is that if you apply it to your own life, right, you can really start to see how it plays. Because what happens is as soon as that one little piece of the trigger comes in, right, you're already projecting out what's coming, right? And so you're already functioning in a defensive kind of place because of the projection that is in place. So you either put yourself on the offensive, like you're going to, you know, you'll have to come out on top, so be in attack mode, or you put yourself on the defensive, which is what the in this situation, what the man is going to do. He immediately gets defensive. You can see it. Boom, it's like a wall goes up, and then he's just defensive, right? Because that's what was patterned in. And so use it in your own life to recognize where you do that, right? Where you witness something just played, and in that one moment, you can witness that the personal self is already making plans about what's going to happen next. Oh, say that.
This is part of... Oh. At my job, I took on an extra role, and I was asked to... It's not really a biography, but I was asked to share my experience with this new role that I took on, and it's going to be in a newsletter. So I immediately got triggered because, of course, I'm very science and math oriented, and I always sucked in English, and my English teachers would always give me back my papers and tell me, you could do better. You are very intelligent. You could do so much better. And I would say, but that is my best, and it wasn't acceptable. So something like this, when I have to write a specific something, that I get so much anxiety. And in doing this work, I don't experience the anxiety like I used to. I can more or less witness it. But where I get held up is... just kind of sitting in a place where it's like getting rid of that consistent projection of, but it's my whatever I end up writing, it's not going to be good enough. I'm going to get that same, like I can sit down and write it, but I just keep having this projection that when I go and submit it, whoever reads it within the college and outside the college is going to think that that's not good enough. Like, uh-huh. It could be better. Uh-huh. You know, you are a professor. It should be better than that. Uh-huh. So,
okay, and then this is beautiful. So what if it's true?
What if it's true?
Well, I have accepted that part of Megan's personality and how she has defined herself as someone who's not good in English, someone who is not, you know, the best with words and writing and whatever the case may be. So,
okay, I'm going to cut in for a second and I'm going to ask you, if you've accepted it, where does the anxiety come from?
I accepted it as, so there's two parts to it. One part is the program going. The other part of it is witnessing it and letting, when I say accepting it, okay, that doesn't have to change about Megan. It is what it is. So that's what I mean by that.
Okay, so that's a level of acceptance, but that's not true acceptance. If it was truly accepted, there wouldn't be any anxiety at all. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is good. So now let's fix it. Right. Let's fix it. And this can be so simple because you have a couple options, right? I mean, it's so simple. So one is accept it and just know that whomever ends up seeing it most likely is going to be like, wow, this is like substandard work for a professor. And you just accept it knowing this is all I got and that's it. Right. And you're okay with that. Or find someone to write it for you. There you go. And it really is that simple. If you have accepted the fact that English is not your thing, right? It'd be like, you know, we have an IT person here. Well, could you walk in and would you expect yourself to excel at his job, right? Without the proper training or whatever? No, of course not. But you wouldn't feel down on yourself if you went in and gave it a shot and you weren't successful. So why feel down on yourself about this? It's because it was programmed in that you could do better. Okay. Well, of course, so from a very innocent place, let's see it through the mind and the eyes of the teachers that you had. What they knew about you was that you were an excellent student. And what they knew about you was that you did excel at math and you excelled at science. And, you know, so they can look at all of that. And so they're like, well, based on that criterion, there's no reason you shouldn't excel in English. Right? Never mind the fact that you were doing the absolute best you could and you just don't have the English gene. Right? And that's really all there is to it. But you can see how pernicious that whole little imprint is. Right? Because in to a child, that makes a very, very big impact, especially, and of course, this is why it happened to you, because you're a perfectionist. Yeah? So you take a perfectionist, of course, what are they going to draw to them? Someone who's going to tell them, you're not perfect. What's the matter with you? You're not perfect. And then, of course, because you are the perfectionist and attached to being perfect, you're only going to continue to draw that to you. So why on earth did you get someone ask you, you know, to do this writing thing and it created anxiety in you? Because it's still at play. Exactly. So it's very simple, really. You know, know that it's not your strength. It doesn't need to be because, you know, why should it? It doesn't need to be. And work with that. So maybe for you, it's as simple as you kind of do the summary of it and then you hand it off to someone else to pretty it up. Will you spell check it for me and check it for grammar and make it perfect, right? And it doesn't, what does it say about you? Actually, it says you're pretty smart, I think, right? This is funny. I remember back, let's see, I'm trying to remember when this happened for me. It was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. But I remember because I had, so my background, right, was I was actually trained as an English teacher. And then I didn't teach after I got out of college. I ended up moving down to North Carolina. And down here, I did mostly like executive administrative work. So office management. And, you know, I was like, I ran a small stock brokerage office and like, so that was my world. And I remember when I started doing my quote unquote spiritual work, right? I remember I was standing at my computer one day and I think that my guide had asked me to, for the longest time, she would ask me to help her with exactly what I'm talking to you about. So she was constantly sending me things to fix for her grammatically and everything. Obviously very easy for me, no big deal. And I was always very happy to do it.
And then I ended up helping her with some other stuff. And it was more, it was like all the work that I'd ever done, admin stuff. Now, this is no mistake on her end, obviously, right? But on my end, I couldn't see it. And I remember going into such resistance, right? I was like, I hate doing this. Like, this is why I left doing that, because I hate doing this stuff. And it was maybe like a year later that it just dawned on me one moment. It was like one of those light bulb moments. And I was like, but I'm like naturally really good at this. You know, it's not an identifier, but just in within my nature, I was excellent at multitasking. I was excellent at putting things together very quickly, very proficiently, getting them out. You know, someone could send me something and I could make it sing. Right. And that's what I did. And so in that moment, I recognized, well, what are you fighting it for? Like, what's the point of fighting it? It is what it is. So utilize it. Right. And if in a moment you don't feel like doing it, so don't do it. Like, that's okay. That's all right. But to stand in resistance of it, of course, would only lead to someone asking me over and over and over again, you know, would you do this? Would you do this? Would you do this? And then you end up feeling anxious about it, or you end up feeling like you're being, you know, kind of overtaxed and overworked and underpaid, right? That kind of thing. Well, it's only because of the attachment that we've created about the whole thing. It's an excellent story, though, Megan. Thank you for that, because that is I love how in this particular story it comes from, you know, of course the vast majority of the imprints come from childhood, and I love this because it just shows how influential teachers are, right? And of course, from that innocent place of the teacher, they wanted what was best for you, right? And so they pushed you to excel. Well, of course, and that's beautiful, right? Were they, you know, is it a kind of a shame that they couldn't recognize that when you said, I'm doing my best, you actually really meant it? Sure, of course it is. But you can see the innocence underneath it, right? And that's important. That's really important, because so often when we recognize these things, then we want to hold it against the people. You know, it's your fault that I'm this way because you put it on me, right? Is that what happened? Yeah, but it happened from a very innocent place. And that's what we always have to come back to. You know, the people who function the way they do only do it because that's what they learned to do. It doesn't matter who it was, if it's a parent or teacher or whomever, it doesn't matter. You know, everyone's just doing what they learned to do. And there's innocence in that. So don't hold grudges against, you know, those who you recognize have kind of wronged you in that sense. You know, see them for the divinity that they are, and recognize that within, you know, within the story of what happened, that they were as kind of misled as you were. You know, that's good. Yeah. You're crazy. Let me read this thing. We got an office, I will tell you all. If anyone's in the Charlotte area, we actually have our own office now, which is very exciting. So I've been like painting and doing all kinds of menial labor this week. So I have not been on Facebook and everything. And just today, I was on Facebook for all of 20 seconds, I think. And I just happened to see this one posting on the Shambhala Center Facebook page, and I happened to see that PLAN had commented on it, that we should bring this up on the BBS show, because would you say it was like a mind bender or something like that, right? So I'm going to read it. Let's see what happens. It's a Byron Katie quote, and those of you who know me know that I adore Byron Katie. Her work is beautiful. So here's what she says. I can't make myself not believe what I believe, or believe what I don't want to believe. I can question what I believe, and thus be enlightened, spellbroken, transcended. Wake. What did I say? Oh, wake me up. Yeah. I can't make myself not believe what I believe, or believe what I don't want to believe. Why is that true? This is good. You're sneering at me over there. Why don't you answer the question? Why is it true?
I'm not sneering. I think it's fantastic. I love it.
Okay, so you give me your interpretation. I can't make myself not believe what I believe or believe what I don't want to believe.
Well, because the pattern is still going to run.
Oh, that's good. Why?
Well, because it's a program. It's just going to keep going. So the beliefs are really... Okay, so we always say we're not here to change anything. We're here to see through it. So it's still going to be there. It's still going to exist. You know?
Could it change? Let's look at the question because this is really good. I can't make myself not believe what I believe. Is that true? Is there a way to take a belief and then turn it around so that you don't believe it anymore?
Yes.
Okay. But if that's true, then that just blew this thing out of the water.
Yes. But but for those that are embarking on this path, this is something that I believe that they... I believe.
This is something that should be... Because you have to realize that you're not, it's not going to just change. It's still going to run.
Yes.
Yes.
But there's a piece you're missing.
Okay.
Have you caught that, any of you? Listen, I can't make myself not believe what I believe or believe what I don't want to believe. And I asked you, is that true? And you said no. Because you can see where you could believe something and then have the experience where you stop believing it. Yes?
Yes.
So is it true or not?
Yes and no.
What if final answer is no?
Final answer. Well, yes and no, because there's a yes... And no, so okay, so you have...
It's, well, that's lucid.
What's the word? Yeah, that paradoxical, that's the word you use, right? So, all right, in this 3D reality, yes, this is very true. In highest truth, no.
Is it?
It's not.
Multiple levels.
Yes.
In this reality, is it true that I can't make myself not believe what I believe or believe what I don't want to believe? Not really.
Wait, which level are we at right now?
Because you all agreed that your belief could change to something else.
Yes.
Right. So that would make this not true. You're missing the key component.
No, I don't think it's your belief.
Oh, your belief could absolutely change.
I don't. Okay.
Now we're confusing ourselves.
Say it.
Because we're polarized. So we're going to see both sides regardless. Both
How?
Sides
mm-hmm.
by what we believe and what we choose not to believe. And when we switch our belief, it's still going to be what I believe and what I...
Yes, do. Yes, that's exactly it. That's beautiful. That's exactly it. Because you're still going, you're still believing all of it either way. So you can say right now, I believe A... And I don't believe B, but the testament alone that I don't believe B shows me that you believe it.
Because you're holding one.
You hold both.
You're holding one is what I do believe.
Ah. A light bulb just went off for Tim. Yeah. See how deep that is? It's very deep. You automatically hold both sides. You always do. Remember, just one's conscious and one's unconscious, right? The whole belief thing?
Yeah.
Well, sure. And so she says, She says, I can question what I believe, and thus be enlightened. Questioning what I believe. Mm-hmm. And isn't that the key? And in the questioning that you, of what you believe, what you recognize ultimately is that you believe both mm-hmm. on different levels. And that even beyond that, that none of it is binding to you, right? And then she says, and thus be enlightened. And I like her choice of words there, because when I see the word enlightened, everyone has their sense of what enlightened means, you know, by definition. But when I see it, the word enlightened, I think unburdened, unfettered. Like that is enlightenment to me, because that's what the beliefs are. They are the constrictions that form around the heart. And they are your fetters, right? That word coming from the Buddha. He named his son Fetter, didn't he? That's what he named his son? That's what it meant, was fetter, because it was an attachment. Yeah. Yeah. An attachment that didn't need to be there. And then he saw that so quickly. You're the thing that's going to bind me here. You know? Yeah. Oh, I just sent a whole bunch of people into... Run away from the computer. All right. So yes, and then she says, spell broken, transcended. And that's exactly it. You believe all of it. And as soon as you say there's a belief, I promise you, you're already believing the other side. And you can see it through your resistance to it. That's why I always tell people, as soon as I see resistance, I know I've got you. Right? If I'm working with you. And I'll push and prod for things. And then as soon as I see the least little bit of resistance, the yeah, but, or the, well, I don't know. I know I've got you. There's something that you're refusing to see about yourself. And I know it because I see resistance. It's not brain science here. It's fairly simple to see. So it's very simple for you to see in yourself if you're open enough to be objective when you see it. So as soon as you see resistance, recognize that, so here's one where I'm holding one and I don't want to see that I'm holding the other, but I do hold it. So the I that can end up believing something different than it used to believe, it doesn't matter. It's six of one, half dozen of the other, right? It's the same thing. You just go from one pole to the other. And that's what the mind does anyway. It just repolarizes all the time. That's how it keeps you kind of stuck in it, right? Just that back and forth. So in Megan's story, you know, there's the downward spiral side that says, oh, I'm terrible at writing and like, what am I going to do? And they're going to judge me and then it swings itself over to, but this is who I am. You know, and I accept myself this way, you know, as her nose grows longer, right? Because that's what's going on. It's the mind's way of trying to appease itself so you don't feel crappy, right? Because what really is sitting there is it's always the negative side that's sitting underneath all of it, right? And that's another one of those things that's so brilliantly seen in the work, is you see that it's all those positive states of mind are only there just to hide the negative. And that's where we're all sitting all the time, is in the negative states. And we just cover it up. We've become very adept at covering it, okay? Until we're not, you know? Because at some point, the fetters are undone. And then you are the positive states. That's just what you are, right? So if we look at Megan's story, the Christed being that would experience what Megan experienced would have no qualms about saying, ooh, they asked me to write something. I'm going to need to find someone to make it pretty for me. I'm like, there's nothing to it, because it's not personal, right? Does it matter that for whatever reason, writing isn't a skill in this particular form? No, who cares? Some people are good at math. Some people are good with words. You know, some people are just better out in nature. Does it matter? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's all just a perfect expression, however it's being expressed, Right. So do you view it differently after this, as far as what you do now with your assignment?
Yes, I already was going to have my mother look it over for me. Thankfully, Linda was sitting there when I was venting to her, and so she was helping me as well. But yeah, so I can see looking back and with me trying to observe what was going on, it would have been easier if I had just said, stop and either been in a space where it was, okay, well, whatever my work is my work, and whoever perceives it in any way and whatever their judgments are, whatever. Or I'll just, write up what I can and have someone else look at it, and then it would have been done.
Yeah, and at that point, it's a non-issue, isn't it? I mean, it's a non-issue.
It would have been done, both the work and what was running.
Right, and it never even had to run. That's the thing. So, can the program continue to run? Well, sure. But let's look at it really closely. If Megan steps into that space where she truly is unattached to this concept of her not being, the most capable of people when it comes to writing, then at that point, does that program need to run? Because what was holding it in place?
The identification.
So now there's no identification anymore with being a good writer or a bad writer. It's a non-issue. And now, will it pop up? Well, sure, it'll pop up because it's going to test. Is it really a non-issue? But after a few occasions like that, where it comes and there's no charge anymore, it's going to stop coming. It just doesn't need to play anymore. So can the program stop? Sure. Sure, the program can stop. And you all have experienced that, I'm sure, in certain respects. Now, the anchor points, takes a while for those to stop, right? Anchor points are a big deal. So such as physically injuring yourself and not saying, ow, that hurt. It's going to be a long time before that one disappears completely, right? Because the identification still, takes place with the form. But can that be transcended? Absolutely. So I love the example of that, it was several years ago, right? That Buddhist monk who lit himself on fire in New York City on the street. Do you remember that? Yeah, he went into meditation, had a can of gasoline, and he was in nice and deep, and he poured gasoline all over himself and lit himself on fire. Didn't move because there's no identification with the form. There's no program there. See? Linda's looking at me like, he died. That was the point. That was his, it's not that dissimilar than the Christ on the cross, right? To show you're not the body, you're not the form. He had other work to do. Yeah, made a nice statement. Freaked a lot of people out. But that's it. There was no program there. Nothing that said, I'm a form and ouch, it's getting hot. Right? And I'm sure that there are people that just listening to that will think that I'm like sick for laughing at it, but he would laugh at it because that's the whole thing. He was not that form any more than you're the form, but it's an anchor point. It's a huge one. It's a huge one. You're the awareness, that this entire holographic reality of yours is spinning around, but you're the still point. Did you do what I said? I told you to do that day about space, moving through space. Did you do it? You didn't do it.
No, I did it for a little bit.
I have bad students, so I challenged Tim one day because this is a really good one. I'll share it with you because I want all of you to do it too. Take a second sometime, especially if you're out walking. It's a beautiful way to do it, and change your perspective so that you aren't the one moving through space, but you're the still point and space is moving through you. Mm-hmm. You should see the faces. Yes. 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 I bet you have. And it's beautiful because that's actually what's happening. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that's literally what's happening. You are the still point. But it's so convincing in this reality that you believe yourself to be kind of in a space and moving through a space. That's not what's happening at all. Right? You're the still point that, because of the way that this whole thing is constructed, you perceive it in such a way that you think that you're in a form, looking through a form, and then having to move through the space between forms. And that's actually not what's happening at all. There's nowhere to go. Yes, Linda, you look challenged.
Well, no, it's something that I feel like I've been experiencing lately on my job, because I've let go of all of the, you know, attachments to, oh, I just don't want to be doing this anymore. And I'm there and I'm doing it from the place of love. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm so lost in love with what's going on that it's like, I can't explain it. It's just like you're lost in love. That's the only way I can express it. It's just like it's just happening around you and coming through you. But
that's beautiful. And that's exactly it. So in that space, that is being present, right? And in that space, it really is all happening just around you, and you're just there as the observer. So when that observer is like really strong, that is the experience. The experience, I mean, you could be standing at your sink doing dishes, and you look down, and it's like there's just this awareness of hands moving through soapy water, but no sense that they're your hands, right? That's kind of not even part of the thing. And it's a very, you know, it feels very surreal because, you know, we're so kind of programmed to experience reality the way we experience reality or what we think is a reality. But then when you stand outside of it, it's very different. So I would challenge everybody, do that. You know, take a walk, feel the air moving against the skin, right? Watch the landscape move by and recognize that you aren't the one moving forward. It's all just moving past you.
You know, when I imagine doing that, like I feel some fear that I might trip or fall or something. Like if I'm letting go of the body, then what's going to happen to it? Will it drop the dishes? Will it trip on a crack in the sidewalk? Like, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So there does seem to be like some attachment to the body where it's like, I don't want to get hurt.
Yeah, well, huge attachment to the body. And the reality of it is that you're not the one controlling it anyway. Whether the attachment is there or not there, it's not like the attachment falls away and you stop controlling it. You aren't controlling it now. We have to just start doing this on video. It's so perfect. That's a little disquieting, isn't it, to hear?
So,
it's not even happening.
I believe it's happening.
And who believes that it's happening? So the bottom line of it is it's not even being experienced. in highest truth. Because this paradigm that we're going to call duality can't exist. It can't.
So even if he trips, you're not going to get hurt. There's nothing there to get hurt, right?
Nothing more to get hurt than there would be if he walked outside right now, not even thinking about it, and fell down. It's not any different. You think you're the doer. You're not the doer. Remember, I've said to you over and over again, you at some point you will have the experience of looking, you know, moving to your pantry, literally, and having the space of, oh, I wonder what the hand's going to grab. Because you aren't that. You aren't that.
So am I just so totally identified with this thing I'm calling a body that I think I'm actually moving my hand and waving?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you think it's your hand.
But I'm not doing that.
No. And you see now in this experience, this, you know, this is great because you can see when, remember I said to you during that session we just had, how difficult it is to transcend this reality. Look at right there. That's the perfect example of why it is so difficult and why, you know, people have sat in caves and meditated lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. I mean, talking about people who used to sit in caves for, you know, 30, 40 years straight. Meditating in a cave, right? Just to get outside of the collective consciousness that's so binding. And you're attempting in this lifetime to do that work in the middle of the collective conscious. Yeah. It's very dense where we are. We're in a city, right? We're at almost sea level. You have to get up over a mile high. It's over 6,000 feet to get actually outside of the collective because it actually sits down low. So where we live is very dense, very dense. And you're attempting to transcend it from within it, right? That's why when people go to the mountains, they feel better. They feel exhilarated, right? They feel like they've been given new life. Well, that's why. There's not as much, the fetters aren't as strong, right? And it's really entrenched here. It's very difficult work. So the fact alone that you have moved as far as you've moved is, you know, substantial. Really substantial. Okay, so back to you're not the doer. This is a beautiful thing to sit in contemplation of. Who is the doer? Who's the doer? If there's only one mind, there's one mind.
Yeah. I believe that.
And the one mind believes it. Yeah? Then who is the doer?
It would not be me. It would not be me, Tim. It would be the one mind.
And would that be the lower mind or the higher mind?
Is there a lifeline I can call? That would be the lower mind.
No. Okay, remember, we go back to, and this is specific to you, looking at the times where you are, your intuition comes in and you're prompted. There's a prompting. And something follows the prompting. In those moments where the prompting is just followed, do you feel like there's a you who's making a decision to follow the prompting?
No.
Exactly. And that's what I'm talking about. Because there's no doer in that. It's just a movement. It's like a movement of will.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. But when the prompting comes and then the mind engages and it goes, I don't think I want to do that right now. I might get wet, or it's, you know, really hot outside, right? And then that is the thing that determines what's going to happen next. That's the faulty sense of the doer. Because identification has occurred and the lower mind believes it's in control of what I do and what I'm not going to do, right? Yeah. You see that? And that's one of the biggest things is transcending the sense that you are the doer. It's very difficult to move past, but very, very, very necessary.
So the real me is, I'm not going to say my intuition, but somewhere in that realm. I'm not sure how to...
Straight up, right? And so when the prompting comes and it's just followed, that's just kind of God just moving out. That's right. And there's no one there to question it. There's no questioner there. Ah, no questioner. That's right. Is it time? 1 minute. Yes. Yes.
I'm asking this as a audience. The Serenity Prayer, so many people live or try to live by that. And it's about, you know, changing the things that I can, accepting the things that I can't. So someone who fully supports and tries to live their life by the Serenity Prayer, what would you say to that individual?
I think that's brilliant. Because isn't that what we kind of say here, that within the construct, you do what you can, but without attachment. And that's it. It's a beautiful prayer. Yeah, absolutely. That's a good question.
Because that's the key part, right?
It's the attachment. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing wrong with doing what you can here, because you do that from compassion. And that's the highest, the very highest human emotion is compassion. Because remember, love isn't an emotion. It's what you are. Yeah. Okay. We good? All right. So thank you again for being with us tonight. We're going to go into meditation. I've got a really nice one for tonight. And we will be back with you next Thursday night at 9 o'clock. Again, if you have any questions, please feel free to send them to questionsforshusada@theshambhalacenter.org. And check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/theshambhalacenter. Love you so much, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Savitur varenyam Bhargo Dev.
You are beginningless. You are divine.